Real quick to introduce myself, my name is Tyler Ross. I'm the Surface Solutions Architect for the U.S. federal government. So what that means is my job is to work with our government customers and SIs as they pilot, adopt, and deploy first-party hardware. Primarily that's Surface Pro 4, Surface Book. We're starting to see some traction with Surface Hub, and HoloLens is what everyone wants to see and touch if you haven't had a chance to see that yet. We're going to quick session today, examine Microsoft devices in highly regulated industries. They told me I couldn't put public sector or government in the title because then it scares away everyone that's not government. So I promise I won't be too government-y, but really just trying to communicate kind of where Surface fits into our overall strategy, specifically kind of vertically aligned to customers that are very sensitive to security, to regulation, and things around that nature. Real quick, how many of you come from a government background? Okay, all federal or state and local? State and local? Awesome, fair mix. What about the rest of you that are not government? Just checking it out? Financial Spencer, yeah. Okay, healthcare? Federal contractor, okay. SI, awesome. You know, DC based? A number of you, cool. So I live in DC, so if I don't answer your questions today or this is completely useless, you can yell at me afterwards or we can figure it out back in DC. Three primary areas we're going to talk about that I end up talking about the most, questions that I get most often are accreditation. Okay, are you FIPS, common criteria, all that fun stuff. Multi-factor, so how are we going to handle things like smart cards or other multi-factor solutions? And finally, the reason why we get most of these conversations is Windows 10. So we're going to talk kind of briefly about where Surface fits into the Windows 10 story. And why Surface or Windows 10 on Surface is possibly different or a different path than you would get with another OEM device. So let's hit the real eye chart boring fun stuff first. Common criteria, FIPS, that list. So these are, if you're in the government space, we care a lot about FIPS. So FIPS 140-2. I get the question a lot, is Surface FIPS certified? Well, Surface is hardware. We don't really certify hardware. I don't know if you have ever asked Dell or HP if their hardware is FIPS certified. Windows 10 is FIPS certified. The advantage that we have with Surface is that Windows 10 was put through the certification process on a Surface Pro 4. So the FIPS validation was done on a Pro 4 and a Surface Book. So we have a certificate that says that, yes, our hardware implemented in this particular way, checked all the boxes for FIPS, on Windows 10. And what we were validated against, so BitLocker encryption is validated, the Win 10 boot manager, BitLocker resume, secure kernel code integrity, and secure kernel. So we checked all the required boxes in order for Windows 10 to receive the overall certification for FIPS certification. So what that means is, again, it was accomplished on Pro 4, so we checked the boxes 4 or 5 times. What that allows us to do is that allows us to run in FIPS mode with FIPS compliant algorithms, both for encryption and for the Windows OS and the kernel layer underneath it. So we can, we can tell you that yes, we are using the FIPS compliant algorithms where we need to, where we're required to, and how we do it. I'm not sure from a FinServ standpoint how important FIPS is, but these are, typically that's the question I get from government, and then it filters down from SIs into state and local and to some of the other groups that are working in this space that need the check boxes. Common criteria is one that I do get asked for outside of government. This is an international standard. Yes, it's run by NIST in collaboration with a number of other agencies. So be it government or FinServ or healthcare is pulling from common criteria. Windows 10 does have this common criteria certification that also was accomplished on Surface Pro 4, on Surface Book, and as well as Lumia 950, 950 XL. I don't know how many of you are looking at Windows phones, but if you are using a mobile platform that does require common criteria certification, Windows 10 mobile running on top of a Lumia 950 or Lumia 950 XL also has the certifications. If you care about seeing these links or being able to print off the certificate, let me know. I have the links in the PowerPoint. I can give those out to you if you need to see those. Let's talk about the next one that I get. I get asked frequently, when is Microsoft going to build a Surface device with an integrated smart card reader? Reason for that is if you're in the government space, be it the U.S. government or most federal governments across the board require physical smart cards. So that's, you know, your HSPD-12, if you're here in the U.S., requires, you know, a approved second factor. Physical second factor is actually what it requires now, so a physical chip. The U.S. government implements that via a smart card. A lot of the contractors and SIs are also using smart cards. So there's our requirement. So Surface, how many, hopefully you all have seen or used a Surface Pro 4, Surface Pro 3. The leading principle inside of Surface is design, period, full stop. We are, you know, Surface was created in an effort to give Windows fans, Windows enthusiasts, an alternative to Apple. You know, Steve Jobs goes on stage, opens a manila envelope, pulls out a MacBook Air, everyone's heads explode. It's a beautiful hardware. It's a really compelling device. That's what Surface was designed to do. Surface was designed to give Windows that experience, that premium hardware, premium feel, premium experience. As soon as you start throwing in things like, you know, smart card readers or other accessories that are a little more line of business focused, we lose a little bit of that consumer appeal. And you know, we're here talking about IT pros and the enterprise and government, but a lot of the reasons why my customers want to deploy Surface is because it is thin, because it's light, because it gets 9 hours of battery life. You know, they see the commercial for it on, you know, watching the Super Bowl. They see Johnny Manziel smashed against his head. There is that appeal that, hey, this is the exact same device that you buy at Best Buy. And they are. There's no government version of this device. They are identical, whether you buy it from CDWG or go to Best Buy. So the, you know, that is the mentality inside Surface, that we need to have that compelling first-party hardware story. So then it comes down to us and how we implement that into the government. Microsoft as a whole is going to tell you we need to push derived credentials, virtual smart card, things like that, using Azure for multi-factor authentication, where when I sign in, I get a push notification to my phone that I type a PIN in, or I use my thumbprint on an iPhone, or things like that. Additional ways of verifying I am who I say that I am. Unfortunately, that's not, you know, completely deployable and ready to go across the board in government. So what we did, myself and one of my coworkers reached out to several of our hardware partners, trying to, you know, people that make cases for us today that are in the third-party ecosystem, and we worked with Incipio. Incipio is the same company that builds the cases they use in the NFL, build a number of different accessories for iPhones, Androids, Surface devices as well. What they did is they built this case for us. It's the Incipio security case. If you notice, it covers the, just goes around the device, clips onto the four corners. But you notice the USB port's covered up. And the reason that's covered up is because that USB port is then split out and goes into a USB hub. The USB hub splits to a USB pass-through. So I still have one USB port, which is especially important on tablet devices. I still have a USB port. But then I also have a smart card slot. So this reads, PIV cards, CAT cards, any card that you would expect to be able to use for Windows login. If you're in the DoD space, this is also a multi-voltage card reader, so it will read both zipper and nipper tokens. If you use different voltage tokens for admin and non-admin, this can read both of those. So this device is currently being used by the U.S. government. It's being deployed on multiple types of networks, different levels of networks. The reason why is that this card reader works, plain and simple. If you've ever deployed tablets or mobile solutions that with card readers before, a lot of people have struggled with finding a card reading solution that works reliably. Maybe the drivers aren't signed, so they don't work appropriately, or they're not updated appropriately, or it'll only read in certain classes of cards. It'll read the class 6 card, not the class 7 card. Incipio spent a lot of time and research working with, you know, the people that are building card standards to make sure that this card reader works across the board, period, full stop, end of story. The reason why this is a compelling option is, you know, yes, we're using smart cards today, but if you're involved in DoD or government, you know everyone's trying to get away. We want to have the option to use virtual smart cards. We're doing it on the phone. We want to get to where we can do that on the device, on mobile devices, laptops, and tablets. What this device lets you do is you can buy a Surface Pro 4, you can buy the case, log in with PIV card today, CAT cards today, but in 6 months, 12 months, 18 months, when your organization begins to pilot derived credentials or virtual smart cards, it's not a new device. You don't throw the baby out the bathwater. You peel the case off, or you leave it on because it does give you rugged protection. It got a hand strap, things like that, that, you know, if I want to use it as a tablet, are useful. But as soon as I'm allowed to do virtual smart cards and derived credentials and things like that, I'm not still stuck with a, you know, 7-pound, 4-inch thick device because it has a physical smart card. So it's a lot of words around that, but on the early users that have been testing this, it's only been out for about 4 weeks, so it's still brand new, hot off the press. It's fitting a need. It kind of takes a beautiful device and covers it up in this, you know, very government version of black, but it's functional. It does exactly what it needs to do. Doesn't add a ton of weight to the device. It weighs less than a pound. And you know, you get the added benefit of a hand strap. I don't have this in my slides, but I'll show it to you anyways. What I also have, so yes, I talked about phones earlier. There are certain people that are doing virtual smart cards on phones. What I have here, it's a prototype. We may go to market, this may not. This is a Lumia 950 XL. So this is our large version of Windows Phone. This is a case that Incipio is working on for the Lumia 950 XL. It's got a card reader in there. This is only really important if you're someone who's DoD or very, very restricted to cards. A lot of people are allowed to use soft certs and things like that on phones. But this is what we're working at for certain use cases where you still must use your CAC or you must use your PIV card to reach your resources. I bring that out only for one reason. That is to show that Microsoft is trying to make sure that customers that are working in these environments that do require things like smart cards or other additional things, like we may not solve it in the physical hardware, you know, because that hardware we started to use, the same one we got to sell to Coca-Cola and Home Depot and to your aunt and uncle that go to Best Buy and need to buy a new device. What we're doing is we're trying to get creative with third parties, with our accessory manufacturers, and also how we engineer the device at the very beginning so that we can then hopefully bring the solutions to market. I'm going to really kill a smart card here. The last question I get is, okay, why don't you put in the keyboard? Keyboard's removable. You could easily just, you know, do it. So HP has a device with a smart card reader in the keyboard. The reason why Microsoft has not gone that route is we build these to be two-in-ones. So as soon as I come up to this device and I want to use it as a tablet and I pull the keyboard off, I lose my smart card reader. Say I leave the keyboard on and I fold it around the back. Windows registers this keyboard being folded down as keyboard position 3, which is an eject, so it removes the device from Windows. Reason for that being is I don't want to accidentally be hitting these keys when it's folded around. So as soon as I fold it around back, it's going to remove my smart card. If we're in DoD or if we're following guidelines, as soon as we do that, it locks my machine. So putting it in the top of the device, we can guarantee you that, you know, if you leave your keyboard at home, I still have my smart card reader. And as I move throughout the day, whether I'm docked or undocked, have my keyboard or not, I can still log into my machine. If anyone wants to see that, I'll pass that around afterwards if anyone wants to see that. A few other ways in which we're trying to solve multi-factor. Again, I just said, hey, we're still requiring smart cards. There are some agencies that are looking to use Windows Hello. Has everyone seen Windows Hello, the facial login? So Surface Pro 4 and Surface Book have two different front-facing cameras, your standard normal front-facing camera for video calls that you'd expect in a tablet, but as a second 2D depth sensing infrared camera. And what that does is when it's on, it uses that and the normal front-facing camera to find reference points on your face, and then converts that using a feature inside Windows called Windows Hello to a hash. That hash is then stored and cryptographically bound to TPM inside the device. And then when I go to log in the next time, it's going to compare my face against that hash. It's not storing a picture of my face. It's not going to be fooled if I hold up a photograph or a phone of my face. It's actually doing depth sensing. So things like early iterations of facial recognition, you could fool it with a picture. This is doing depth sensing, making sure, no, I am a 3D person. It's doing some live detection, make sure, you know, are there things that we think a human would be doing while looking at a screen? Yes. You got a question? Sorry, I thought you had a question. But what that allows us to do is that gives us some pretty high level certainty that you are who you say that you are. So we can say, you know, you actually are Tyler Ross. We can know that because we've seen you before. You validated who you are before. That information, again, is stored in the cryptographic module of the device, so we can validate its security. We know that it's not being manipulated or messed with. So certain agencies, some of the civilian agencies and other groups, especially in state and local, are allowing that as a second factor of authentication. Because, you know, it is something you have and something you know. You know, I have myself, and I'm able to validate myself against my specific device. That feature does not roam amongst devices. It is locked to my specific device, so it is not going to be stolen and replayed across other devices. So there's a inherent security in there. I mentioned Azure Multifactor. I'm sure there's some demos this week talking about Azure Multifactor authentication, the ability to use that as a second form of proving who I say that I am. And finally, if you do have a Windows 10 phone, I don't know if any of you out there have a Windows 10 phone, starting with the anniversary update, you can now log into your PC from your phone. So when you go to log in, it's going to say, you know, phone authentication or phone sign in. As soon as you tap that as one of your available options, I get a push notification to my cell phone where I can sign in using my eyes, using the iris scanner, or sign in using a PIN number. So that way, I'm validating off of that specific device on another device that I've already proven who I say that I am, and that will actually log me into Windows. The next point is security. I don't mean to talk about DoD the whole time, but if you've seen any of our talk about Windows 10, we love saying that the DoD is moving 4.4 million seats to Windows 10. That is a huge number and a big reference case. We love the Department of Defense, but let's talk about why that is. The Department of Defense is responsible for both keeping us physically secure, but also guarding the cyber targets inside of our borders. The reason why they're moving to Windows 10 is really two specific reasons: credential guard and device guard. The ability for us to more or less eliminate the threat of a pass the hash attack. If you think about it today with Windows 7, if we do have an O machine inside the walls, those credentials get stolen. It's replayed across the environment. That's what's keeping up CIOs and CISOs across the environment. You've seen the pitch. I'm sure we've talked about device guard plenty this week. Why that works on Surface is the people that wrote that piece of software, the people that wrote the security features, are writing it on Surface. If you've used this on other devices, there are a number of requirements you have to check. Surface checks those devices, or Surface checks those boxes. For certain devices, you have to go through and apply a certain version of BIOS or a certain version of UEFI to be compliant. And then as soon as you do that, you notice that your performance starts to lag or your battery life starts to diminish. Again, Surface Pro 4, it's a box you check inside group policy, or you can do it local policy. Your machine reboots, and we have credential guard turned on. So you can check a box, reboot your device, and you are now physically separating your authentication service from the rest of Windows. That is a Windows feature. OEMs absolutely have and will continue to make the devices available for that. But what we're saying is it's working best on Surface. It's as we're piloting and testing these features, let's do it on Surface because it works. It's designed to work. People who wrote it wrote it on a Surface. The last point I want to hit is Surface Enterprise Management Mode. If you've been around the Surface booth this week, we've talked about it a number of times. But what it actually lets you do is we're giving enterprise control to the peripherals on the device. So the cameras, Wi-Fi, Bluetooth speakers, docking station port, the USB port the keyboard clicks through. Certain environments allow you to use USB, certain don't. Rather than sticking hot glue in there or breaking off the USB ports, we're actually giving enterprise the ability to manage access to those features. Typically when this is done with third party or a piece of software inside Windows, it uninstalls it or tries to remove it. What we're actually doing is we cut power to that feature, to that component inside firmware. So when you turn the device on, you see the Surface logo and it boots up. There's a number of checks going on as we turn on each of the different components inside of the device. If you've disabled Wi-Fi, we actually don't send power to the USB bus that's connected to the Wi-Fi radio. So it's not that it doesn't load in Windows and it's still on in the background, silently unaware to the user. It actually never powers on. And that is a big feature as we talk about classified spaces or financial services or wherever else it may be where we need to have some protection around data security. We can turn off the USB port. We can actually turn off the data port of the docking station. So if you've ever used our dock, you can hook it up a docking station, have multi-monitor, keyboard, mice, the whole thing. We can disable the ability to send data through that port. This is what we're doing at a firmware layer, but it's reversible. So maybe the device is used for these 6 months by someone who's working on a project that is of particular importance. Maybe I work for an auto manufacturer, I'm doing R&D, I'm building our next car. These 11 devices in this room have the blueprints or the plans for our next vehicle. I want to make sure someone can't come in with a flash drive and pull them off. And this is one way in which we're able to accomplish that. And again, it's not a piece of software that could be bypassed. It's actually done at firmware. It's locked via a certificate that can only be rewritten by the device by the certificate that originally created the policy. Specifically in our highly regulated spaces that don't allow Wi-Fi yet, that are still trying to figure out what Wi-Fi, how to do that in a secure manner, we can certify and guarantee and show you that Wi-Fi never loads inside the device. All right, now the fun stuff, where the objections that I don't have a good answer to. Number one with Surface Pro 4 is serviceability. So in most of these spaces, data sovereignty is incredibly important. If I'm in financial services, that algorithm that's picking out what I'm buying and selling is incredibly valuable. If I crack my screen, I can't send that device back to have it worked on because that hard drive has proprietary information. If I'm in defense or intelligence, I definitely can't send those hard drives outside of our walls. Many devices in this form factor allow you, they've got screws or holes or things that you can pull apart and remove the hard drive. we don't do that, and we're probably not going to do that. And it kind of goes back to what I said earlier, where design and surface matters. There are a number of sessions this week to talk about design and why design matters. As soon as you put screws and trap doors and things like that, it starts to feel like that 7-pound big bulky laptop. You know, it's a challenge in order to build a device that's, you know, 8.4 millimeters thin, it weighs 1.7 pounds. As soon as you start putting trapdoors and screws, we take away from that experience. The reason why these customers want Surface is because it doesn't feel like the big bulky laptop they've been using for forever. So we don't have, you can't open it up, you can't replace screens. You know, those are the things we can't do. The way we get around that is two different ways. One of which is via a warranty. We have a warranty specifically available to enterprise customers called Microsoft Complete for Enterprise. And what that allows you to do is say, you know, not every device that has a problem is non-bootable. You know, maybe you can boot, maybe you crack a screen, but you can still boot into Windows to where you can pull your data off, you can wipe the drive, you can do things like that you need to do. But sometimes hard drives fail or components fail and you can't boot up and validate that you've wiped the device. What we allow you to do is, for a certain pool of the devices you purchased, we'll let you do kind of a non-return exchange. Where you call us up, you read us the serial number of the device, and we will ship you a new one, and you destroy the other one. So it's a special warranty. It's not, this doesn't come from, when you buy from Best Buy, you don't get it. But if you're buying these for an enterprise or a government or financial services, it's one of the options. It's called, again, Microsoft Complete for Enterprise. A subset of the devices you purchase can be actually, you can actually receive a replacement for the device without having to send it back to us. The second option, and depending on where you work, this is or is not acceptable, we have a tool called the Surface Data Eraser. It's a Windows PE-based application. You plug it into the USB port, turn your device on, and it will go through and do a forensically sound wipe of your SSD. So for many places, if you need to consult with you afterwards, we can work on getting you the forensic report of, you know, a third party has gone through and validated that. But the tool's available online. You can download it. I don't recommend you trying it because it will wipe your device. But it is a way in which, you know, if you do need to return a device, if you need to retire a device, or you have a cracked screen, things like that, you need to go on a warranty claim, you can wipe the device before you send it back.
Now, how does that work, though, if you turn off the power of the USB?
Yeah, you're in real trouble. This is the Surface Enterprise Management where we get into a little bit of a problem where if you disable certain things, it's really hard to recover from it. So the way, if you disable USB and disable docking, you can actually, if the device will boot and you can boot into UEFI, you can unenroll the device. If you have USB, basically you stick a USB in, it puts a signature on your USB, I plug that into the machine where I created the policy originally, it creates an unprovisioning package, and so I can undo it if I've got USB. If I don't have USB, it's a 512-digit code that I have to manually type in from one to the other in order to unenroll it. So when you disable USB, we give you a little warning that says, hey, be aware that if this goes wrong, you're going to have to type in exactly a 512-digit code. So there is an unenrollment mechanism. It works really well with USB. Without USB, it's a bit of a problem. That's where these two start to become a little bit of a challenge. But that tool is available. It's online. It's public. It's included as a value add when you buy Surface. Happy to send that around if you need it to. The other point on here is about Surface Hub. It's kind of the one point I mentioned, Surface Hub. The good thing about Surface Hub is it does have a removable hard drive. You mount it to a wall. It's probably a little bit less. Concern there, but you can easily remove that device's hard drive. Everything on the Surface Hub is serviceable, except for the glass, so speakers, cameras, microphone, pens, all that, we can replace those. Just you break the glass, we're in real trouble. Where we have a problem with Surface Hub is the fact that we use Mobile Device Manager to administer the device. It's not group policy. You're not going to domain join this, install your line of business, third-party disk encryption, third-party antivirus, things like that. Surface Hub is designed to be an appliance. You put it on a wall, you know, you walk up and use, and you can walk away with confidence. As soon as we start throwing things like McAfee and Symantec and other, you know, typical enterprise software like that, we break that experience. There is no ability to install, you know, no ability to manage the group policy, no ability to install those third-party management tools that you typically find inside Windows. On the other side of that, we do have the ability to manage with MDM. So if you use Intune, there are radio buttons inside Intune to push policies down to Surface Hub. If you don't use Intune, use AirWatch or MobileIron or Maz 360 or one of these other device management solutions, we have a list of all the policies online and the custom XML that you need to do, so you can push your own custom policies that way. It's a bit more work, but it is doable. User authentication, at least in federal and I imagine in the other places, anonymous access to email is a bit of a challenge. So one of the features of Surface Hub, I can pull up a whiteboard, take notes, solve problems, you know, create an infrastructure diagram, and then I have the ability to email that out. When I go to email it out, it doesn't ask me who I am. It sends an email from the user account or from the device account on the Surface Hub. So it comes to you as Surface Hub 01 and not as from Tyler Ross. That's a challenge, especially in highly regulated areas where we need to know who's sending what. You know, I don't want someone emailing the CEO an inappropriate message. So things like that, you come from an anonymous space, anonymous outbox there. We solve that in two ways. First of which is, you know, secure the room. So we know what part of the room is. You had to badge in to get into the room or badge in to get in the facility or to the floor or to the hall, so I know who's in the room. The other way is a non-device technical way. It's exchange transport rules. Make it so this device can only send emails to this distribution group or to this person or to this admin who then can forward it out to the necessary people. So we can lock it down, you know, through exchange to prevent it from sending out to the whole wide world or to executives in the company and things like that. But it is definitely a gap in how we typically think of email access. And that's it. So there's your evaluation slide. There's a lot of government in there, but I do want to stress that the features that were built for government, things like smart cards, things like enterprise management mode, were built with feedback from financial services, from healthcare, that you know it was those needs were taken into effect. And the biggest thing that I can add on that is that if we're not doing something, let us know. Yell at me, yell at someone else. If there's a gap in there, if there's a certification we don't have, if there's a feature set we're not lighting up, we want to. You know, we have a whole arm inside Surface whose job is commercial. It's job to make sure that if you want a device for your customer to do a certain thing, you know, we may not build the custom build device with the smart card reader, the custom device that you want, but we want to adapt the solutions that we currently have that are supportable, that are mass market, that are, you know, have tried and tested across the gamut. I want to make sure you have what you need in that form factor. Thanks.